A chemical attack that was so horrific in Syria against innocent people, including women, small children, and even little babies. Their deaths was an affront to humanity. These heinous actions by the Assad regime cannot be tolerated. The United States stands with our allies across the globe to condemn this horrific attack and all other horrific attacks for that matter.
In a major White House shakeup, President Trump's chief strategist Steve Bannon on Wednesday losing his seat at the National Security Council. Bannon's removal from the influential post viewed as a major victory for Trump's national security advisor H.R. McMaster. The move reversing Trump's much criticized decision to appoint Bannon, a political advisor, as a permanent member of the usually nonpartisan NSC.
America and its allies brushing off Chinese anger on Thursday, top officials from the U.S., South Korea, and Japan speaking out on North Korea's latest provocation, now believed to have been a failed launch of an extended-range Scud missile. Top security staff from Seoul and Washington agreed to push ahead with THAAD, the controversial anti-missile system that China has repeatedly called to be shelved.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Thursday. It's April 6, 2017, 5:11 in the morning. Glad to have you along for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day right before Friday. One more day and we're there. Lots going on today here on the program. Later in the show, we're going to be talking to Lawrence Levy, the author of To Pixar and Beyond. If you've never heard the true story, the real story behind the success, the rags-to-riches success of Pixar, it's coming up later in the program. First, let's start on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning. Futures are pointing toward week open on Wall Street later this morning, with the Dow futures pretty much flat this morning. Actually, S&P and NASDAQ futures are right there with them as investors wait to see this meeting between President Trump and the Chinese president happening at Mar-a-Lago. Crude oil trading a little bit higher this morning. Not much, though, up $51.20 a barrel. Around the globe, stocks slipped, bonds rose, with the risk appetite souring, signs the Federal Reserve might start paring assets holdings later this year as a chance of early U.S. fiscal stimulus seems to be evaporating. Investors also a little bit wary before this Chinese and U.S. meeting in Florida. Topping the agenda will be trade and North Korea. Big problems in the rest of the world as well. North Korea probably among the biggest now above the trade part of that meeting. Let's check markets this morning in Asia and Europe. First, Asia. Looks like the markets will end the day down, with the Nikkei leading the way off almost 1.5%, off 264 points. The Asian Dow almost 1% lower as well. And same story with the Hang Seng, almost off 0.5%. In Europe this morning, all the indices, the big indices, that is, are down. The FTSE is off almost 0.5%. Same story with the DAX this morning. Some stories that have been developing since you slept and went to bed last night. European Central Bank head Mario Draghi says the recovery is gaining momentum in the 19 countries that use the euro currency, but insists the bank's stimulus efforts are still needed. Draghi, in a speech today, says the recovery is progressing and now be gaining momentum. But he said that recently stronger inflation figures, one of the bank's key goals, continue to depend, in his words, on continuation of our monetary policy stance, and that it's too soon to declare any sort of success. Also, the British government has introduced new rules aimed at eliminating a gender pay gap that sees men earn almost a fifth more than women. This has been a discussion here on the Opening Bell this week. We had Equal Pay Day here in the U.S. earlier in the week as well. By April 2018, public and private sector companies in the U.K. that employ 250 people or more will have to disclose figures including the median wage for both men and women and the overall gender pay gap. Firms are also supposed to produce a plan to narrow that gap. Tax day is April 18th, which means we all just have days to finish the job of filing. It is the topic of our WGN Associated Bank Thought Leader Conversation today. We do those conversations every Thursday here on the Opening Bell, and we're happy to have Doug Myers with us today, Senior Vice President and Private Banking Regional Manager. Doug, welcome back to the Opening Bell.
Thank you, Steve. Good to be here.
Busy time for a lot of folks. It's that go time for taxes.
Yes, it seems to be a busy time. In fact, my accountant is next door here on Michigan Avenue, and I was calling him to take him to lunch like a good banker should do, and he tells me he can't come up for air until at least after April, and then everybody's extending into August, and then most people extend to October. So his life is busy really till October, and it's a crunch time for these guys. What do we have, a couple, 12 more days before filing deadline?
Yeah, it's not a job that it's their busy time, their good time, but I don't think it's a job I'd like to have.
No, they seem to be, you know, relaxed in the fall and then start again for the next tax season. So it's never ending.
From a wealth management standpoint, which is your area of expertise, what is the most important thing we should all be thinking about as we get ready to put pen to paper on these taxes?
Well, I think, obviously people think that they can do something prior to the tax deadline, and really it's a little bit too late. You know, when we talk to our clients, we talk to them in the fall prior to the year end, which is the tax deadline for getting your tax strategies in order. And there are certain strategies which you can do, take certain deductions, such as charitable deductions, which come off your AGI. And also, you might want to think about liquidating certain securities to make your charitable deductions if those securities have some gains in them, which might be a good time to sell, or they might have some losses even, and which would be a good time to sell because there'd be no tax consequence, and they'd further get the tax benefits of giving to the charitable deductions. So there are some things you can do. Certain real estate limited partnerships you can structure to take advantage of some tax deductions as well.
At what point is it good to go to a tax professional? If we have a lot of investments, if there's a lot of wealth to manage there, is that generally the time?
I would say so. I mean, there's some great programs. For example, TurboTax is a very user-friendly vehicle to prepare your own taxes, but that's typically for a person who's got, you know, W-2 wages, might have a few deductions. But I think with the complexity of the tax structure now, you really need to go to an accountant, especially if you have deductions such as school tuitions, medical deductions, interest and dividends. All that plays into it, and it's gotten more and more complicated as we've gotten older, I think.
Aside from waiting until the last minute to do taxes, what is the biggest mistake that people make who are filling out these forms?
I think not taking all the allowed deductions. There's so many small loopholes that Congress has passed over the years, and it's gotten so complex that you really feel like you have to go to an expert to do it now. It's very hard to do it yourself.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now, stocks gave up early gains and ended yesterday's session lower, with shares in banks leading the way. The Dow Jones lost 41 points to close at 20,648. The S&P 500 fell 7 points. The NASDAQ was down 34. Last month's snowstorms are thought to have cut into hiring, and tomorrow's report from the Labor Department is expected to show a gain of only 175,000 jobs last month. That's down from an average 237,000 in January and February. Ford is recalling thousands of cars, trucks, and SUVs because of vehicle overheating that can cause fires. The automaker will install a sensor to tell drivers that the coolant level is low. Federal regulators are concerned about the underlying reasons for coolant loss. Apparently, the slogan, "What happens here stays here," is working. The Las Vegas Convention and Visitors Authority says a third of the city's visitors last year were millennials, those between 18 and 35, up from less than a quarter in 2015. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It's our thought leader conversation. Associated Bank Doug Meyer is with us today, Senior Vice President, Private Banking Regional Manager. We're talking about Tax Day, April 18th, coming up. Doug, before the break, talking about some of the things that it's probably too late to do already, things that we should have done before the end of the year. But there are some things that we can be doing after we file our taxes for next year, things with W-4s, that sort of thing, is there not?
Well, that's a good point, and I think the basic thing you have to look at, and especially for younger people starting out in their career, is take advantage of that 401k. You know, it's pre-tax, so anything that goes into your 401k is not taxed, and it grows tax-deferred, And so it's not taxed until you take it out as income, which is 59 and a half. So young people starting out their career, they might be 21, they might be 26 or 7, but it's a good time to start taking advantage of that 401k deduction. And a lot of companies will match 3 to 6%. And when that comes out of your paycheck every month, you know, the company's matching that, and all of a sudden they're getting 100% on their investment. You know, where else can you get that kind of return on anything that you put in as an investment? So we always tell our younger clients, take advantage of the deductions and take advantage of that 401k as much as you can.
And now would be the time that you could, after tax time, figure that out and see what kind of help or hindrance it's been.
Absolutely.
And it's free money, too. This is the other thing. You mentioned that that's 3 to 6%, and the match is, you know, we hear at the Tribune it's that. This is free money that would be similar to a salary.
It is. It's very hard as a young person when you're 21 or 25, pick a number, to think about, okay, I need to take away 6 or 10% of my money and put it in long-term for my retirement. It's a very hard concept to think about when you're that young. But the tables show that if you start early, as opposed to when you're, let's say, 38 or 40, where a lot of people do, the difference is amazing. And the tables show that you can never catch up if you start, for example, at 40, as opposed to 21. And so if you can just start with the discipline of putting away that money, maybe 5%, maybe 6% every month and get used to it, that's going to be a good discipline that's going to benefit you for the rest of your life.
Filing an extension is always out there. That's an option for folks who can't make the deadline. I've never had to do this, but it always seems kind of silly to me because you have to pay if you pay, if you owe, right? You still have to pay money.
You do. You have to pay, and then you can file the extension. Yeah. But they want your money when it's due, and that's the April 18th for this year.
We're hearing a lot about the IRS being understaffed and outtaxed, I guess is a good way to describe it. How does that impact what we're doing right now, heading up to the 18th?
You know, that's a good question, and I don't know. I know I have a letter from the IRS, and I'm expecting a refund from last year, and it said I would get it in 6 weeks, and that letter was dated February 2nd. So I've yet to see it. So, you know, the government is a big entity, and sometimes we don't know what goes behind the closed doors.
Obviously, if through the year you're putting too much in and you're getting a big refund at the end of the year, that's your money. But if that's your situation, do you think it's a good idea to maybe invest your tax return if you're getting a big one instead of spending it on something?
You know, absolutely. And what I say, excuse me, is, you know, spend a little on yourself and feel good about it, but take away the rest and invest it. And, you know, if you can get into that discipline, especially, as I mentioned, at an early age, you can reap great benefits down the road for that.
We're hearing a lot these days about these new digital applications, the apps, the other things that are available for folks in the banking area. But wealth management is having a hard time catching up, or they're lagging behind. What's going on with that?
There's, as we've talked before, there's so many applications and online platforms that help people with their investing. And there's some good ones on the market, but they seem to be a little basic. And wealth management is all about a relationship. It's all about our consultative process in managing people's finances. And I think without that personal relationship and without the one-on-one expertise that we provide our clients, you're not going to get that online. You're not going to get that from one of these robo financial planning modules that are out there. And they're becoming prevalent. But I think when you look at a true wealth management platform like we offer, it's looking at all aspects of someone's financial condition. And some of these online platforms are not able to adequately do that.
I saw a report recently, only 41% of wealth management products are available online. Given what you've just said, do you think that will ever change? Or you think this is always going to be an uphill battle?
I think there's always going to be the technology aspect. I mean, I think it's going to be more and more enhanced as we go along, and hopefully we'll still have a need for people like me to talk to clients and to give them some expertise and financial advice.
You've mentioned millennials a couple times. How hard is it to get them to understand the whole savings part, the whole wealth management aspect of it? Because some of them have money, right? I mean, they're just not doing what they should be doing in terms of saving.
You know, it's a generation that we're studying a lot, and it's very interesting because a lot of them are making a lot of money, and we see a lot of differing opinions on what to do with their money. And, you know, it's a challenge, and I think we're all learning how to, number one, manage millennials in the workplace. I read a study, and in 20 years, I think we're going to have 75% of the millennials now in the workforce, and it's going to change. I mean, they're very technology-oriented. They have different values, I think, than we were brought up having. And I'm not saying that's bad. It's just different. And we all are going to learn to adjust to that.
The challenge for the flip side of that spectrum, people who are maybe in their late 40s or early 50s, if they've not done a good job of saving, they're in a lot of trouble probably. What advice could you give them to lessen the impact of that?
You know, I would say continue to try to put away money and invest and save for your retirement. And I think, you know, you're behind the eight ball if you wait till you're 40 years old. A lot of the baby boomers have been very materialistic in acquiring possessions, and I think that's going to make it hard for them to retire. And I think traditional retirement going forward is going to look very differently than what our parents thought of. I think a lot of people feel like they want to continue to work in their 70s and even 80s, and we see that sometimes. And so I think the current view of retirement is looking very differently than what our grandfathers and what our parents looked at for retirement.
As we look at the stock market over the course of this year since the election, it's been doing really, really well. How does that translate into, or how does that impact our wealth management?
I think it gives, there's a very high level of consumer confidence, excuse me, especially because of the stock market, as you mentioned. I think people feel like that the market's going to continue to do well. I think there's going to be a couple of interest rate increases this year. And if you're a net saver, that can be a very good thing. If you're into a lot of debt, let's say floating rate debt, that might be a bad thing as interest rates increase. But I think overall the optimism is there in the economy. I think people feel good about the market. I think companies are feeling good about revenues and their growth. So I think the prospect is good for continued strong market this year.
Doug, good to see you. We'll see you again next month.
Thank you very much, Steve.
Doug Myers is the Senior Vice President and Private Banking Manager, Regional Manager at Associated Bank. Remember, you can listen to our past conversations at WGNradio.com on the opening bell page and follow Associated Bank at Associated Biz on Twitter.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Glad to have you along. The name of the book is called To Pixar and Beyond. It is about the improbable story of Pixar Pictures, the Toy Story folks. Lawrence Levy is the author. He's also the former Pixar CFO. And the book, again, tells the improbable story of the success of Pixar. First of all, Lawrence, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell. Why is this an improbable story?
Well, it's improbable because when I joined Pixar, it was 1994, and Pixar was pretty down and out. It was not an entertainment company. It was a graphics company that had burned through $50 million of money and had nothing to show for it. It had no serious business prospects, and most people told me that was really a silly move to go into a company like that.
Why did you do it? What did you see something there? Was there a spark?
There was a spark. You know, I saw a couple of minutes of Toy Story, and it wasn't finished. It was over a year before the film came out. And I just looked at it, and I thought, like, somewhere within Pixar there is magic happening. And so I need to find out where that is, and that really inspired me to give it a shot.
Do you think that's something that Steve Jobs saw, too? You talked about this being a financially struggling entity. He was really paying a lot of the bills himself, wasn't he?
Yes. When I got to Pixar, he was paying payroll, the shortfall in payroll every week out of his personal checkbook. I think he did eventually come to see it, but he bought Pixar to be a graphics company. It was originally supposed to make a computer. It did, in fact, make a Pixar imaging computer, but they didn't sell any of them, and so it wasn't the original vision for the company to become an entertainment company.
When you saw this company, what was at play here? I mean, it was based in Silicon Valley at the time, and were there? What was the dynamic, I guess, is the better question?
Well, the company was frustrated when I found it. It had been around for a number of years. It hadn't really gone anywhere. There was kind of a toxic relationship between the company and Steve Jobs at the time. And so my job was actually to figure out what the strategy ought to be for the company. So it was just floating along. It was up here in Silicon Valley, and it was one reason why I didn't even know in a way how to be an entertainment company.
You worked with Steve Jobs to turn this around. What were those early days like? How did you come up with a plan?
Oh, it was almost a plan by default. When I went in there, I started to feel that there was nothing that could possibly work. And then they were making this film called Toy Story, and of course there was a thought maybe we could turn that into a business, but nobody had succeeded in doing that, building an independent animated feature film company. So it took a while. I almost had resistance to that because it was so risky. But eventually that looked like it was the only way out for Pixar, and so we had to put everything behind that possibility.
You mentioned earlier that this was 1994. What did Toy Story look like then? What did this animation look like back then?
Oh, it was very crude. I mean, the first time that I saw it, there was it was almost blocky characters moving across the screen, and it was a film that we didn't even know we could finish until very close in time before it came out.
Because this was a whole new technology. It still surprises me when I hear you talk about painstaking. We're talking about 110,000 frames throughout this one film, Toy Story. It was kind of hard to do, wasn't it?
I liken it to flying to the moon for the first time. The amount of computing power and people that it took. There were 110,000 frames. Each one of those frames on the computing power of the day could take hours or days to just draw on a computer. Imagine sitting at your computer and waiting days for your image to come up to see if it was correct.
Well, technically, what was the biggest part? What was the biggest problem with that, or the biggest challenge to making it look real on the screen?
Oh, the biggest challenge technically was the drawing part. Once you have instructions for the computer to draw something, then it has to churn through all those instructions to draw it pixel by pixel, and every single one of those has to be right. Pixar invented the technology to do that. It's called RenderMan, but it had never done anything on that scale before.
You talk about how this has sort of evolved now. I don't know that I can imagine our entertainment industry without Pixar. What were the visions that helped it get past these initial hurdles? How did that happen?
Well, there were a couple. The first was to focus on that, to put everything behind building a studio to make animated feature films. The second was respecting the idea of story. It's a lot of people will say, story is king or something like that, but it's hard to live by that because it's very risky. But Pixar really is at its heart and soul a story company, and we did everything we could to allow it to become that.
Do you think that this story could have gone on in any other place other than Silicon Valley? Do you think the story had to happen there initially?
It's hard to say. There were a lot of advantages of sort of being outside of the Hollywood circle. It allowed Pixar to create and do original stories in different ways without being tethered to kind of traditional ways of doing animation.
So when Toy Story was finally released, you saw it on the big screen. What were your thoughts, and did you know that you did landed a winner then?
We didn't know until the weekend that it came out, but when it came out and we saw audiences' reactions to it, people's jaws were dropping just all over the place, and so that's when we knew that we were onto something. But before that, we didn't know that the public would have an appetite for that kind of animation.
What was the other road that Pixar could have gone down? You mentioned earlier that it was meant to be a computer-type company. What could have been the other outcome had this gone a different way?
I'm not sure there could have been one. The technologies, Pixar's computer had already failed in the marketplace, and the technologies that it was able to sell, like the RenderMan software I mentioned earlier, just had no market. There were not enough companies to use it. I think it was sort of computer animation or bust in a way by the time I was sort of 6 months into it, that's what we realized.
Hearing this story, reading this story, I'm left to wonder about Steve Jobs. You worked with him one-on-one. History remembers him better, I think, than current time reported on him. Is that a fair way to describe this? Because who would have thought Pixar, he bet on Pixar, and who would have thought it would be what it is today? But him.
Yeah, it's true. It's one of the reasons that I wrote the book. I think it's a very important side of the Steve Jobs story, one that is often overlooked. But Pixar really secured not only his comeback, but, you know, his sort of maturation as a business executive. And when he went back to Apple, you know, I think the things that had happened at Pixar, his relationship with Pixar, a lot of things that happened there, actually, were really important in his life. And so to understand that whole story, I think it's important to know this one.
So Disney has this really your baby and Steve's baby now. Are you happy with the direction it's in and has gone and is going?
Well, yes. The acquisition by Disney has been amazingly successful because the idea was not just for Pixar to make animated feature films, but to reignite Disney's capacity for it. And look at what's happened, you know, coming out of Disney. We have, you know, Academy Award winning, you know, Moana and other films. And so it's been really an incredible marriage.
This whole, from a, you know, Wall Street standpoint, too, this story is sort of unique. And tell us about how it ranks up there with acquisitions and companies. And I mean, because you're talking about a lot of money that was at play and is at play with this company.
Yeah, well, in the original, it's funny looking back on it, the original IPO on Wall Street was extremely difficult. When I wrote the book, I said I was going to make a page turner out of an IPO because it was an adventure. It was almost impossible to get done. And then, you know, we raised the money we needed, and then 10 years later, we sold Pixar to Disney for, you know, almost $8 billion, and because of the films that it had made and the stock value at the time. So it was it had very humble beginnings, but it ended out okay.
If you had to predict the future, where do you see Pixar being? Maybe 5 or 10 years.
Well, I think it'll still be making great stories. I think that's the key to this kind of entertainment. Even if the medium evolves, even if we move to virtual reality storytelling, it'll still be about the story. And the sort of spoils will go to the companies that know how to tell great stories in whatever medium they're doing it in. And I think Pixar will be one of those.
Lawrence, great story. Thank you for sharing it.
Oh, delighted to be on the show. Thanks for having me.
Lawrence Levy is the author of To Pixar and Beyond, also the former Pixar CFO. Again, the name of the book, To Pixar and Beyond.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, Dow futures now picking up a little steam. Looks like we might have a positive open on Wall Street, up 19. S&P and NASDAQ futures higher as well. Now the latest on commodities and agriculture. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. I'm not sure you or a lot of our other listeners remember the term pink slime, but it was part of the meat industry several years ago, and it's still around. ABC Broadcasting lost a last-ditch bid before South Dakota's highest court to avoid a trial in a beef producer's $5.7 billion defamation case over reports about a product that critics called pink slime. The case is now scheduled to go to trial on June 5th and could last 8 weeks. Lean, finely textured beef is made from beef chunks, including trimmings, and exposed to tiny bursts of ammonium hydroxide to kill bacteria. And that was the center of the controversy and now the lawsuit. Well, as we look at yesterday's livestock trade, what about the cattle market? Cattle futures gained modestly yesterday, aided by discounts to this week's cash price expectations. April live cattle closed up just 5 cents a pound to $118.27 a hundredweight. Nebraska packers yesterday lowered bids for market-ready or cash cattle from $124 down to $122 a hundredweight. Bearish market fundamentals pressured April lean hogs yesterday, prompted investors to sell that contract and at the same time buy deferred months. April hogs down 5 cents per hundredweight yesterday in a very quiet trade. That's what happened in the marketplace yesterday. I'm Orion Samuelson. Have a great day.
Thanks, Orion. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Thursday, April 6, 2017. A couple of business reports today. The big one due out is the Labor Department releasing the weekly report on how many people applied for unemployment benefits last week. Also, Freddie Mac will release this week's weekly mortgage rates. That's the Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for today, Thursday, April 6th.